Cover Story, a new investigative podcast by New York Magazine that's got a lot of people on edge.
What is the number one rule? We would all go, don't f*** your clients.
It's a gnarly personal look at the underground psychedelic therapy world and its boundary problems.
All my clients try to have sex with me during these sessions, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to try to have sex with you. And he's like, yeah, you will.
Cover Story, Season 1, Power Trip. Check it out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Film Complex to Queens, Mason Avenue's Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I will be joined by Lucas Vlahos, Ken Levin, and Thomas Henderson shortly. But obviously, Christmas is this weekend, so is Kwanzaa, so everybody is out doing their thing and celebrating with family and friends and whoever else. Obviously, happy Christmas to everybody out there listening. Happy Kwanzaa to everybody out there listening. And what we're going to talk about this week is basically what we want Santa Claus to bring the Mets. Hopefully not Cole. Hopefully the Mets were not naughty this year, though they did have their fair share of scandals early in the year. But hopefully Santa will be bringing presents. And I hope that Santa leaves Tommy Tanis, who is the Mets Vice President of Amateur and International Scouting, and Mark Chamuda, who is their Director of Amateur Scouting. I hope that Santa brings them magical scouting reports, because the 2022 draft, it seems like it's going to be a big one for the Mets, and I want to see them really maximize this opportunity that they're going to have in this upcoming draft. They didn't sign Kumar Rocker last season. He was the 10th overall pick. So because of that, they're going to be getting the 11th overall pick in the 2022 draft. Because they ended the season with a 77-83 record, they're going to be getting the 14th overall pick in the draft. Now, in the compensation round, whenever that is, it's still up in the air right now, but the Mets are going to be getting a pick from the Angels in compensation for them signing Noah Syndergaard. And it's pretty likely that they're also going to get a pick from someone else for signing Michael Conforto, because I don't think that he's going to be re-signing with the Mets. So all of those picks combined with their normal second and third round picks, and it looks like the Mets are potentially going to have 6 picks within the top 100, which is pretty good. Now, I don't think there's anyone out there who can argue about the success that they've had in the first round over the last couple of years. Kumar Rocker, you know, everything else aside, he was an extremely talented pitcher. Pete Carl Armstrong, they selected him in 2020. He's with the Cubs now in that terrible Javi Baez trade, but, you know, he had a pretty high floor, and that was a minimum, thanks to his defense in center and his bat on ball skills with potential to grow. Brett Beatty, he's advanced faster and more successfully than I think any of us could have imagined, and he looks like he's turning into the real deal. Jared Kelenic, he's with the Mariners now, and yeah, that debut last season was not good at all, but all of his tools are still, you know, average or better. And once he gets his sea legs under him, he's probably going to be the all-star caliber player that we basically thought he could be back when he was a Mets prospect. David Peterson, you know, he had a good rookie season in 2020. He wasn't really able to recapture that in 2021. But in his defense, A, he was injured. And B, you know, he was never really projected to be as good as some of these other names, or even really as good as he was in 2020, to be honest. 2016, there was Justin Dunn and Anthony Kay. You know, another two guys that aren't around anymore, but both are already major leaguers. So, you know, that's really a success right there. But after the second, you know, after the first round, second round, successes have kind of been far and few in between. In 2016, Pete Alonso, obviously, But after him, literally nobody else in that entire draft either made it to the major leagues or are currently like a top prospect in the system. In 2017, there's Mark Vientos, but same thing, not a single player in that entire draft decides for him. 2018 gave us Tyler McGill and a couple of minor leaguers, Simeon Woods Richardson, Jalen Palmer, Hayden Senger, Brian Maguire, but, you know, that's basically one success and four wild cards in 40 picks, you know, not the best. 2019, obviously, you got to give an asterisk there because they employed a unique strategy in order to get Matthew Allen. But, you know, that year, the team got, in addition to, Brad Beatty, the first-round pick, Josh Wolf, the aforementioned Allen, Jake Mangum, and, you know, that's it. 2020, pretty recent. Obviously, very abbreviated, only five rounds because of COVID and everything. But ironically, that might actually be the best draft out of all of them. The only two guys that are still on the team are JT Ginn and Eric Orsi, and they are both top prospects in the system. But part of the reason that the Mets minor league system is in such poor shape, particularly at the upper levels, is because of years of poor drafts outside the first, two or three rounds. The Mets would basically value players more highly than they turned out being, and that prevented them from having the money to grab overslot players later on. So what do I mean by that? So let's look at 2016. That was the first year that I started doing all the draft stuff. Justin Dunn and Anthony Kay were in the first round. Great. Everything worked out there. Pete Alonso, even better. That really worked out well. So third round now. Blake Tiberi, he signed for $500,000, which was about $96,000 less than slot value. He's since been released after struggling and not making it past high A. Fourth round, Michael Paez. He signed for $446,000, which is exactly slot value. He's since retired from baseball after struggling and not making it past double A. Fifth round, Colby Woodmansey. He signed for $334,000, exactly slot value. He's since been released after struggling and not making it past high A. Sixth round was Chris Vile, and he signed for exactly the slot value, $250,000. He has since retired. He was unable to get past low A. Seventh round was Austin McGeorge. He signed for $175,000, which was about $10,000 below slot value. And he's since been released after making it to double A, but struggling there. Eighth round was Placido Torres. He was really the only intentional money-saving pick in all those first 10 rounds. He signed for $10,000. And he's since been released after not getting past short A. Ninth round, Colin Holdeman. He was actually an overslot signing. His $400,000 bonus was about $250,000 over the slot value. And he has been held back by a lot of injuries. And he might now be coming into his own, so the jury's out there. And then finally, 10th round that year was Gene Cohn. He signed for $150,000, which is a few thousand dollars less than slot value, and he made it as high as double A, but he struggled, and he's since been released. So I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty, but, 2017, similar. Guys like Quinn Brody, Tony DeBrell, Matt Winokur, Marcel Renteria, they signed for, about slot value, and they really haven't panned out. And obviously the guys that were intentional money-saving picks, Connor O'Neill, Trey Cobb, Cannon Chadwick, they haven't either. Ironically, the one guy that actually might make it, Steven Valines, he got traded, so, oh well. 2018, same thing. And all these guys that basically should be in double A or triple A at this point, they're gone. So now the team is relying on too many kind of over-the-hill vet types or just random indie ball finds that they're able to get. And, not a great strategy. It might not have too much of an impact on win-loss records for Binghamton and Syracuse, but it definitely has an impact, when you need to tap into player depth when the MLB team needs it. And as we saw this past season, like, sometimes the Major League team really, really, really needs it. So I'm hoping Santa leaves Tanis and Tremuda a magical list of the guys that are absolutely worth it. Because, you know, as much as that strategy has worked that they've been using over the last couple of years, you know, it's left the team kind of top-heavy. And it's not like talented players aren't available outside of the first three rounds. Looking back at 2016, Shane Bieber, Corbin Burnes, Joey Lucchese, they were all fourth-round picks. Kevon Biggio and Nick Lopez, the fifth-round picks. Tommy Edman, he was a sixth-rounder. Tony Gonsolin, he was a ninth-rounder. And then you could do that, you know, the same thing with picks from 2017, 2018. Probably not 2019, because that's still a little too soon. But the point is that there's plenty of talents, MLB talents, in those later rounds, and they were valued accordingly. And if in 2022 the Mets are able to accurately identify those guys and, you know, value them accordingly, the team doesn't need to, you know, basically concentrate all their resources in one, two, three guys like they've been doing the last couple of years. So, Santa, please bring that list. We don't want Cole. And obviously, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
So for Christmas, for baseball, and in baseball purposes, there's a few things that probably really two are the two main ones that I can think of two things that I would want given to the Mets system. But one is baseball on a whole, which is probably cheating, but also I think is understandable given the circumstances. But the one thing I would want baseball on the whole to get is the end of this lockout for with a good deal for the players. Like, I definitely would not want the owners to come out on top here in terms of, like, them screwing over guys who actually, the reason why we watch and analyze and care about the game is the players, it's not the owners. So even when we're fans of a specific team, like all of us listening to this are Mets fans, I'm sure, and us and all of us on the pod are Mets fans. Players are still the ones who get you to the ballpark and get you to care more. Like, it's just undeniable that it's easier to care when you have good and fun and exciting players, and baseball needs more of that. And I think if the lockout ending with more pro player stuff to come out of it than what we went into it, which is a big reason why the lockout happened, is it's just not a good situation for a lot of players in baseball, which otherwise we wouldn't be in the situation. So yeah, that's what I want from baseball as a whole. But for the Mets system, I think I want two things. One, I think I want the Mets to show that they care about the system, and I think that will come in due time, but it's not really something you could ask for and get received within an offseason or even two, just because, like, it's a lot of infrastructure and a lot of moving parts, and the Mets have had entire front offices to rebuild and rebuild again and miss out on their chance to rebuild. It's been a kind of a mess for them. So yeah, that's one thing I would like. And I would also like the Mets minor leaguers to be treated better. This is also a long-term minor league thing. I want everyone in the minor leagues to be treated better. It would be awesome, just perfect, if the players and the MLBPA really tried to put in a good word for the minor leaguers, just because it's so hard for them to get a leg up on the situation and get their voices heard and get their and have their voices heard and have their needs met. Because right now we as a baseball as a organization are not helping meet the needs of minor leaguers in any way, and I think that needs to change. That starts with housing, that starts with more money, that starts with better nutrition, that starts with everything. I mean, you hear minor leaguers talk all the time about how bad the minor league situation is, and we don't really do anything to make it better. So for Christmas, I would love for the Mets as an organization and for baseball as a whole to really give those players what they need to function and be professionals, because even though they're in the minor leagues, they're still professionals. That's still a professional organization, and that's still professional baseball, even if it's not Major League Baseball. And they should be treated as such. They shouldn't be treated as unpaid interns who can't who need to provide other ways for them to survive themselves while they're trying to learn, while they're trying to better their baseball life and be competitors and fought and chase their dreams, because the minor leagues makes it hard to do that. So yeah, those are really the two things, two very happy-go-lucky things on this Christmas for sure. But those are two real things that I think baseball has problems with and we need to fix. And for Christmas, fixing them would be great.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast by New York Magazine that's got a lot of people on edge.
What is the number one rule? We would all go, don't f*** your clients.
It's a gnarly personal look at the underground psychedelic therapy world and its boundary problems.
All my clients try to have sex with me during these sessions, and I was like, I don't think I'm going to try to have sex with you. And he's like, yeah, you will.
Cover Story, Season 1. Power Trip. Check it out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen.
Hey everyone, Lucas here with another dispersed segment for From Complex to Queens. This time a special Christmas episode. Merry Christmas to all of those of you who celebrate. Happy holidays to those of you who don't. And Happy New Year to everyone, except for the people who go to watch the ball drop in New York, because I hate you if you do. Holiday greetings aside, let's actually jump in. And Steve's assignment for us this week was to come up with a gift we want for the holidays for the Mets system. And my particular wish is I would like to see the hit tool fairy that I've just imagined up come visit the Mets system and sprinkle some of her pixie dust upon a couple of my favorite prospects. Anyone who's listened to this show for long enough or read any of my work on the site probably knows where I'm going with this. But the first guy I really want to have a visit from this hit tool fairy is Khalil Lee. I've talked a lot about how much I love Lee. I see power. I see speed. I see the shape of someone who should be a good defender once their routes and reads get a little better at the major league level, or if shifting helps that, whichever. But the physical tools are there. As is the approach, very good ability to discern balls from strikes. But and then that's led to some really good minor league production. He was excellent in AAA last year. Of course, when he came to the majors, he struck out in more than 70% of his very brief time here, which is his hit tool issues aren't quite that severe, but this is a real problem, right? He struck out almost 30% of the time in AAA. He struck out almost 30% of the time in AA back in 2019, right? So this is a pretty consistent problem for Lee. And it's something that, unfortunately, like, might limit him to a non-major league career, something like Keon Broxton or that kind of player who's a useful fourth or fifth outfielder who bounces around and you like to have but isn't a long-term piece. If you imagine that player with even a slightly below average hit tool, or let's even be greedy and say an average hit tool, that's one of the best outfielders in baseball, I would think, right? With his level of power, athleticism, speed, and defense, even being able to make a little bit of contact would make him a viable second division starter, either in center or as a plus defender in a corner. Now, of course, hit tool development is usually the hardest thing to scout and the hardest thing to project. It's also ultimately the most important skill, which is why there's not as much hype around Khalil Lee, I would say. But if I was to ask for one thing, I'd be for him to develop his hit tool, because suddenly the Mets would have a very real, basically major league ready outfielder, something their system definitely needs, with a lot of upside. Right. And that's really nice depth to have behind what is an exciting group of outfielders in Starling Marte, Mark Canha, and Brandon Nimmo, but also a rather frail one. Right. Canha and Nimmo have plenty of injury history, and Marte is an older speed guy. So there's room here for contributions from Lee if he can actually get his hit tool together. And I think it's a real potential monster player if something like this was to happen. Now, will it happen? I don't know. It's really difficult to say. I certainly hope. And if I'm asking for Christmas gifts, that's what I'm going to ask for. But I'm going to actually be greedy and list a couple other players that I think are fitting of this sort of gift. And the second would be Jalen Palmer. Palmer was someone I was super high on coming into the year. Again, similar to Lee in that there's a lot of athletic upside, potential power, speed, defensive flexibility with potential plus defense at in an outfield spot given the physical tools, but the swing is so he's a little ugly. It was definitely a little ugly by the time he got to Brooklyn this year. Just short, but still not making a lot of contact. He struck out almost 40% of the time in AA, and that was over a reasonable sample size. I'm not writing him off as a prospect entirely, but his hit tool problems are even worse than Lee, and it's not particularly close. That said, again, very much like Lee, the rest of the ingredients for an exciting player are here if the hit tool comes around. And if we're, again, wish casting for magical developments, I would love for Jalen Palmer to even just get give him a bad hit tool instead of a disastrous one. Like, give him, what's a good name to pull out here who has a good, not great hit tool? Really putting myself on the spot here, demonstrating my lack of preparation. I don't know. Ike Davis's hit tool. It's a more contemporary example. I'm really blanking on here. Albert Almora's hit tool, which is not as good as you might think. Literally anyone you can imagine who's mediocre but not a disaster, and you'd be looking at a really exciting prospect given the rest of the profile. And the last name I'll mention is kind of the spiritual precursor to Jalen Palmer. And of course, that's Shervia Newton. Very much the same idea. Interesting power, speed, defense combination. Can hit the ball a mile when he makes contact, but has consistently struck out 30 or even 40% of the time. Hasn't even made it to high A yet. And now has stalled out a little bit at A ball. Were he to pick up a hit tool, I don't think the upside is quite as high as Palmer, and certainly not as Lee. But again, that goes from he's essentially a non-prospect at this point, I would argue, to someone I think we'd all be extremely excited to see, like a really interesting, fun, highlight-generating bench player, which is always a good piece to have around. It's good to have optional depth like that, particularly when it's fun. So if there is a baseball Santa of sorts, or choose your gift-giving mystical figure of choice, I'd love for them to come to the Mets system and just add a little bit of hit tool skills to a couple of my favorite prospects. Fingers crossed it actually happens. I don't think I've been nice enough this year, but maybe the team has as a whole. It probably hasn't. Anyway, guys, Merry Christmas. Until next time, love the Mets. Love the Mets.
Cover Story, a new investigative podcast from New York Magazine that's uncovering some secrets from the psychedelic underground.
So basically, in December of 2019, Dave got an email from this woman.
Hi there. I am a student at California Institute of Integral Studies
in the weekend program. I had an experience in my first 2 years where I was essentially recruited by a TA into an underground guide training program.
She had been training to become a psychedelic therapist with Francoise and her husband in this underground training program that they had.
Hello.
And she'd already reached out to James Kent, another podcaster that we know.
Hi, this is James.
Hi, how are you?
Because she was feeling really weirded out.
I felt like I woke up from something and I was like, who else is awake?
You're on speakerphone. Do you mind if I record this conversation? I know.
Listening to the tape of her.
I was just sort of reaching out to you because I'm like, it's happening. Like,
it's really clear that she was trying to find other people who understood what she'd been through or who could see what she saw.
I'd really appreciate it if you didn't use my name or anything.
No, for now.
And eventually she was sent to us.
I was searching for anyone who, like, would get it.
And talking to her is actually what really kicked off our investigation.
Check out Cover Story, Season 1, Power Trip, on Apple or wherever you listen.